generous support for Coastal Windage comes from Cameron's Restaurant Pub and Inn, and now RV Park. Cameron's is the only true British pub on the coast side, featuring 19 beers on tap and more than 60 brands of bottles. Come for the food and stay for the fun. Happy hour specials Monday through Friday. Open mic night on Thursday and karaoke on Friday and Saturday. Cameron's Restaurant Pub in Half Moon Bay.
Broadcasting live from the KHNB studios in downtown Half Moon Bay. This is Coastal Windage, the talk of the coast. The Coastside's own live call-in talk radio show. From Pescadero to Pacifica and beyond, this is the place for Coastside issues, hot topics, and you. And now, the host of Coastal Windage, Mr. Ruben Truthmaker, and his co-host, Crystalline.
Alrighty, good morning, Coastsiders. It's Friday, February 27th, 2026. The wind is picking up a little bit, so time to batten down the hatches and bring in the lawn chairs.
Mm-hmm.
And it's time for some Coastal Windage. Good morning, Crystalline.
Good morning.
I'm Ruben Truthmaker, and here we are, as we are every Friday morning, pretty much every Friday morning, live, two people, actually there's 14 or 15 people in here, but what, two people on the mic, here, real people, not AI agents, or AI agent created chatbots.
What are you talking about, Ruben Truthmaker? I am totally here with you.
Okay.
Huh. I've had a couple of friends that recently have had to call, like, you know, tech support or whatever, and it's just, like, it's so obvious that the AI answering bot is trying to pretend like it's human. And
I mean, this is where we've got is I was on tech support on Wednesday with a person that I was having a hard trouble understanding because of his accent. And thankful to be talking to be struggling to have to try to talk to this person because it was actually a real person. Because I was having some, like, nuanced difficulties and was getting frustrated, and this person was getting frustrated with me. But it was like, oh, my gosh, it's two humans working it out.
Yeah. Because, you know, like, AI, they would just,
yeah,
like, sorry, can't help you. Boop.
Yep. I'm sorry, Dave. We can't complete that function. Okay. We're here every Friday morning, like I said, KHMB, 100.9 FM, rockin' 1710 AM, and anywhere in the world with an internet connection on khmbradio.com. Check us out, Coastside Issues, Hot Topics, you, me, Crystalline, and the crew here, the interns, the engineers, the suits, everybody. No live studio audience. That's the problem with the undisclosed location. Actually, we're having many problems with the undisclosed location. One is that the security protocol for the undisclosed location is turning out to be a bit of an issue. It's tough to maintain an undisclosed location if you have people coming to it, right? Okay, so listeners, Crystalline, Frank the engineer, Noah the second engineer, and I have all signed NDAs. Of course, but we're indentured servants, at-will associates of KHMB. But it's hard to convince a potential guest for the show to sign an NDA of any kind. It's difficult. It can be difficult on a live radio show to book guests, period, because you're like, you got to be in this spot at this time. Which I thought when we created this show, Friday at 9 was a pretty chill time, but apparently not. It's hard to get people in. But then when you ask them to sign a legally binding document, there's a little bit of hesitation there, and it generally results in a combination of the following responses. Why do I need to sign this? What is this about? And have you met my lawyer? So we're having a problem with that. So instead, excuse me, instead of the old-fashioned NDA, non-disclosure agreement, we're working on some kind of biometric system for confirming IDs and confidentiality, right? And if that doesn't work, I mean, we never give up. So if the biometric system doesn't work, We're negotiating with the city of Half Moon Bay to tap into their Flock system of license plate readers. And all you need to do is just elevate the viewing angle just a couple degrees up from the license plate, and now it's a facial recognition system.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, in case you're wondering, just like the city of Half Moon Bay or any other municipality that has these license plate readers, we don't have to ask permission or get obtained signed releases. We just turn them on. Yeah. You ever thought about that, people? Like, there's, you have to if you're putting up on something up on social media, you have to blur out a face or get a release or something, or you're supposed to, or I don't know actually anything about social media, so I'm just talking, but sometimes you have to get a release or blur out the faces. But no, just to drive along the roads, any municipality can throw up cameras and take your picture and put it into a database that then, oh, what's this, can be accessed by Ring or Flock to find a lost pet, or tapped into by...
But Ring backed off of that, though.
Uh-huh.
They heard the outcry.
They say they backed off of it. Again, it's all, anyways, tapped into by, let's just say, nefarious elements.
Yeah, it's just unfortunate that people can't, agencies, big agencies, can't just be cool. Like, that wasn't, what happened was not the intention. Those agencies, Flock, said, promised that stuff wouldn't happen, and all of the, and it just really sucks that there's people out there that will take advantage of these systems, because not for enforcement of immigration or anything like that. Like, that is not appropriate at all. But there are times, and because I spoke in favor of the license plate readers under the very, very, very strict rules that were being promised, because when I worked in Carmel, it did stop a ring of thieves who were vandalizing businesses and actually driving in from Highway 1, doing smash and grabs, getting millions of dollars of purses and clothing and appliances and all this stuff, popping back out on Highway 1 and beelining it to LA and selling them on eBay. Like, it was a real big ring, and a sweet little officer in Carmel, California was able to bust it just because they were able to... they had a license plate reader at the corner of Ocean Avenue and Highway 1. And so there is practices where that it is helpful, and it's just really, really awful that bad actors keep things that do actually help us, they taint them, and it's just really unfortunate.
Have you met people? Have you met people?
I just wish there was better guardrails.
Have you met people? Exactly. Well, anyway, so we're working on that. So if we can get some guests in here. I don't know about the live studio audience. We're working on some folding chairs for them. It's just a bit of a come down from the elevated viewing gallery that we did have. All right. Air quality report. Let's get to that. 0 to 50 is good. And here we are as usual. I mean, it's we have to do it because it's a branded element of our show now. I mean, some people just tune in for the, air quality report. Today, and so 0 to 50 is incredible, and beyond that, irrelevant to us here on
Wait,
the coast side.
Real quick.
Yeah.
If some people are only tuning in for the air quality report, how come we don't do it last? Make them listen to the whole show. And then give them the tiny, tiny tidbit that they want.
Because, unlike the people that you were just talking about that ruin everything, we're not going to...
You're not going to gatekeep the air quality?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Articles today, you go to read an article like, oh my God, the number one thing, never do this when you go to Mexico and travel or something. You're like, oh God, I better, what is this thing? And then it's 14 paragraphs is Mexico is a country south of the United States that has people that live there. Yeah, I know. What is the one thing?
Recipes are like that. There's the whole story about how they came across this very particular muffin, and then you're like, I just want the ingredients for the muffin.
Come on. So we're not doing that. See, we love our listeners. We value our listeners. We respect our listeners. You get it up front. All right. So 13 today in El Granada, 17 in Half Moon Bay, 32 in Redwood City, which is still in the incredible range, but feels not that great. 14 in Santa Cruz, and today in Sequim, Washington, in case anybody's clamoring for some more windage bucks. Come on, windage bucks. You get the Easter egg location right, or the reason why we gave that, you get a windage buck worth over $100 in discounts in local businesses created by to support the Half Moon Bay High School football team. Okay, and you'll get that if you could tell us why Sequim, Washington is in our list of air quality places. Today in Sequim, 40. So, okay.
I think you should tell people the new phone numbers.
Oh, yeah. That would be a good, see, I'm still in the old studio. Okay, so we have a new number, which I know everybody has written down, scrawled on their hands, or written on their, scratched in the wood of their desk. 650, that hasn't changed. That's our area code. 650-712-1233. If you look at it, when you write it down, you're like, oh, it's kind of makes sense. 650-712-1233. If you want those windage bucks, or if you have anything to say about anything, license plate reader, facial recognition, people, or our topics for today. Oh, my goodness. We should probably mention the topics for today, which we may or may not even get to. The banter section of this show is swallowing up like 45 minutes of the show. Okay, today's topics, a night out in Pacifica. Who knew? A night out in Pacifica. How to find your sane center, and I'm just, this is my dubious face, how to find your sane center, or no, the sane center, excuse me. And from a coastside tragedy, something good can come. We'll see if it will, but it can, something good can come, and we'll give an example of how that's already happened with a different coastside tragedy. Okay, a night out of Pacifica, again, who knew?
Pacificans knew.
They do. That's what they told me. Yes, exactly. The broadcast radio game never sleeps, so it's hard to get out and chill after hours because you're just, you're going over the last show, you're researching, crushing the numbers of, like, A-B testing on, what little things worked and what didn't. It's hard to get out and chill after hours, but this past Monday, I went to the venerable Winter's Tavern in Pacifica. And you've never been there.
I have not.
Okay.
But I know lots of people who have who love it.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. I went there to see some live music, which, so I'm not, like, I don't live and die with music. Some people, like, it's music is everything. Oh, my, got on my song list and whatever. Like, whatever's on the radio is fine. Especially if it's KHMB.
I'm in the middle. I have playlists, but I'm not, like,
it's too much
super
work.
Aggressive about it.
Playlists is way too much work. You're just whatever comes on, that's the serendipity of radio and music, and that's the way it should be. Not on-demand culture. I'm only going to listen to the songs I want to listen to.
Oh, no, because Fantastic Fiancé Jesse, he's so good with the playlist and is so cute. He makes a playlist for every holiday and, like, curates it with all the songs, so it's like Christmas songs, Thanksgiving songs, should you know that those exist. He's got multiple Halloween, if you're feeling monsters or witchy or whatever. It's so cute. He's got like probably 100 playlists that are like perfectly curated for every occasion.
I mean, that is impressive. I'll tip my hat to that. But so live music, I'm not interested in going to an arena show ever again, or a festival. Any place that's got porta potties with 100,000 people, that's a hard pass now. live music is amazing in any form. I mean, any kind of live music that's in an intimate setting, I'm down with, whether it's chamber music or hard rock or whatever, because you can see and feel the energy. You can see the musicians, their faces, the communication between them. So seeing live music at Winter's is awesome because the whole area is, like you could practically spit from one wall to the other. So it was great. We got in, and there was we went to see a Grateful Dead cover band called It Was Dead When I Got Here. See, every Grateful Dead so cover cute. Band has to have, like, some, you know, like, pun on being dead or whatever. So now It Was Dead When I Got Here. Thank you.
Beautiful.
Exactly. And Grateful Dead cover band, I mean, normally I would be like, no, that's okay. But a buddy of mine from college, way back when the Grateful Dead were still alive and playing, and all of them still, well, not all of them, but most of them still alive, was in this, so he's a professional musician. He just did a big show with his regular band called the Sunshine Shovelers over in the East Bay. But I told him, I don't do the East Bay, so if you ever come to the Old Princeton Landing, let me know. I'm all over it. Well, literally like a week later, another buddy's like, Joe, my friend's name is Joe Rudd. Joe's playing in a Grateful Dead cover band in Winter's Tavern in Pacifica. I'm like, exactly. Well, actually, you do have to cross a bridge, but once you get out of the tunnel.
Well, I mean, like...
I know.
Toll bridge.
I know. So I'm like, all right, we'll do it. So that was Monday night. 6 o'clock. It's the old folks, you know, old folks hour. So go to Winter's, which I've had never been in, but I love the sign out front, old neon sign. You can see it from the highway. It's, you know, it's well known as like a classic place there. And what a great evening, let me say. Short drive, easy to park, no cover charge, which was nice. Plenty of seats at the bar. I mean, literally, there was maybe 50 people in there, like, dancing and swaying and, you know, whatever. And it was mellow enough that I was able, me and my buddies were able to get seats at the bar and then get up and go to the bathroom and not have, like, 10,000 people knocking on the door while you're just trying to go to the bathroom for 2 minutes. And then come back and your seats are still available at the bar. That's the kind of, like, relaxing live music scene I like to see. And then the music was, the sound mix was fantastic. The band was great. My buddy he plays lead guitar. He was and sings. He was amazing. I particularly liked the drummer. So the Grateful Dead have two drummers and, like, you know, just 50,000 pieces of percussion and stuff. So it was like, okay, this woman is playing like a 7-piece drum kit, one person. Like, how's this going to go? She was amazing. Just like nice. The efficiency of the strikes that she was making filled up the entire sound, amazing backbeat, and it was just one person on a pretty small drum kit. So kudos to her. They played classic songs like Bertha, Dark Star, China Cat, Sunflower, West LA, Fade Away, Friend of the Devil, and this was no karaoke junk, or a cover band, like, we know the song. This was better than the last 5 actual Grateful Dead shows I went to.
Aww.
Yeah. I mean, because towards the end of the Jerry era, I mean, before Jerry died in 95, those shows were getting pretty tired. Pretty tired. This was fun. And another fun thing, the place was filled with old heads. Just swaying and trucking, you know, like, and they're just like, I was by far the youngest person in there, and it was funny to see these old people in tie-dyes, like, and you can just imagine, like, I think I did see those people 30 years ago at shows at, you know, Laguna Seca or something, you know, doing the same thing, or selling veggie tofu burritos out of a bucket, you know, to pay for their gas money to get there. It was pretty fun, and Winter's is amazing. Every inch of the wall and of the walls in there is covered with tchotchkes and knickknacks and all kinds of fun stuff. You could just sit there and look at the walls forever. Stickers, there's a bazillion stickers on the walls. Very fun. So really enjoyed that. And then we had dinner at Valimar Station, which is in an old Ocean Shore Railroad depot building right there at Sunshine Valley and Highway 1 by the police station. And it's another venerable Pacifica institution. I mean, I don't think I'm throwing shade. So if anybody's like, why would you be negative about a local business? I'm not being negative. I think I'm being accurate. It's the building's in the inside, seen better days. It's a little tired, you know, but that's kind of the charm of it, right? Sadly, go. If you haven't been, go. Because sadly, apparently, after 30 years, the Ash family has announced that they're going to be closing at some point coming forward in the future. There's been health problems in the family. This is the problem with these family businesses, is the founding generation ages out, and then the next generation is maybe wanting to do something different. Or the restaurant business is that
really
is not for the faint of heart.
That's happening in farming, too. It's like you've got all of these farmers that, like, know everything inside and out, and then their kids aren't necessarily, like, just jumping at the thought of taking over the farm, and so we might be very quickly starting to lose farms just because there's nobody to farm them. So same with restaurants. Those are two very hard industries.
Yeah, no doubt. Although the restaurant industry doesn't get a lot of government subsidies for their products, so...
That is true. And I think most, like, you hear it a lot that, like, restaurants are, like, the number one hardest business to get started, up off the ground, and then successful. So when you have these restaurants that have been around for, like, 30 years and they're still doing, you know, great and have good reputations, like, that is, like, creme de la creme. Like, they have jumped so many hurdles to make that happen.
Yep.
I think most restaurants close within the first 18 months.
Yeah, I think it's less than that even. I mean, that's even if you get it up and going. I mean, one of the shows I like to watch, Schadenfreude maybe, is Bar Rescue. Have you ever seen
show?
Of like, usually the scenario is the people came in, they bought this bar, and it was great for a couple of years, and then it's hard to sustain because you got to constantly be refreshing, and so people get caught up in like, oh, this is working and everything, the money's pouring in, and they kind of get, I don't know, I was going to say fat and lazy,
like a
but
rut.
You get
stuck in a rut.
Why would I spend money on new fixtures and stuff when people are coming in and, you know, dumping money in, and then suddenly you look around and they're, you know, everything's run down, and
which that's kind of the case for a lot of businesses. And also when businesses start to see hard times, one of the first things that they do is cut marketing. And that's actually the last thing that you want to cut, because when you stop marketing yourself and coming up with, like, the fun ads and, you know, a Locals Day for 20% off,
right,
or whatever, when you stop doing that as a business, people forget you exist.
Yep.
The average human being at this point has to have something flash in front of their face 7 times before it gets committed to memory. And the average person these days has the attention span of a goldfish, even slightly less at this point.
What were you saying? What?
So,
you talking to me?
So, yeah, it's like, so you have to keep innovating. You have to keep moving forward. And unfortunately, like, the longer businesses are in, in production, people get used to doing their routine, and they work in the business, but they forget to work on the business.
Well, this is why I wanted to do this segment today, because a place like Winters, a place like Ballymar Station, old, been around a long time, not at the cutting edge of, you know, design or probably code or whatever, and yet still getting by, and probably, you know, maybe they've got rent control or something, but, you know, in a place where Bay Area rent and expenses are way through the roof, how do these kind of low scale businesses continue to be able to operate for decades? It's probably because Pacifica, like, I would maybe even more than the coast side here, I bet they have their regulars, right? There's like Ballymar Station. I could see if I lived in
Pacific.
Well, that
happens on the coast side a ton, though.
Yeah, I mean,
I can't, like, if walking into Cameron's.
Yeah, Cameron's,
at this point, I know half the people there,
yep,
right?
Yep.
And then going to Cafe Society, granolas, like, it doesn't matter.
Rico Joe's or whatever, like, a lot of people,
yep,
love that.
People have their spots, and they have their different spots for different things. And kind of, I don't know if this happens in Pacifica, but here on the coast side, kind of the fun thing is, like, I can run into the same people at the cafe in the morning and then run into them at, you know, particular restaurants at night, and everybody's kind of got their routines, and there's, you know, we're small enough that you can just keep running into the same people. But I think, to your point, like Winters or even with Cameron's or, you know, the different, or OPL, what keeps them vibrant is, A, they've got a cool charm, right? It's not that cookie cutter stuff.
Right.
And they're constantly doing stuff like open mic nights, karaoke, and they stick with it. So a lot of things that happens with some businesses is when something doesn't work the first time, or it's worked for a while and then one time it doesn't work, they're like, I'm going to cut it. And you're like, no, that was just an off night. So it's like some of the, you know, businesses that have been around longer have learned, like, just because you have an off night doesn't mean, like, get rid of it. And so, you know, they just keep having these fun things that are like, you know, and for me personally, karaoke. So just this last Saturday, like, I have text threads with friends where it's just like, okay, we're going on Saturday, you know, karaoke, like, do you know your song? That's the stuff that keeps people, like, coming and vibrant and...
But some ideas can be dropped. I mean, the all-you-can-eat meatloaf night was, you know, not that big of a success. I don't know if they need to keep trying on that one, you know.
Somebody will love it.
I was there. I just want to back up a second, because we only have like a minute and a half till the break. But the Coast Side, actually, I was talking about the Grateful Dead cover band that was there. The Coast Side actually has some connections to the classic old rock, old classic rock days. So a buddy, another buddy of mine who's been a guest on this show, but who will remain nameless so that he doesn't have people making a pilgrimage to his house, he grew up in Palo Alto in the 1960s with none other than Ronald McKernan. Who dat? It must be, because there's crickets from that. No, everybody in the room was like, Ronald McKernan? Otherwise known as Pigpen, the original keyboardist for the Grateful Dead. And my friend actually inherited Pigpen's estate and has an incredible collection of vintage classic rock items. My friend lives here on the coast. Pigpen grew up in Palo Alto. I mean, you know, the whole crew, right? Grateful Dead, Ken Kesey, all those people that were up in La Honda. Like, you know, that. In addition to our now Coastside connection to Pigpen and the Grateful Dead, did you know that in the early 1970s, the Doobie Brothers had a party house in Monterra? apparently up off of Grant Road in Monterra. Old-timers tell me they used to have parties there and play their instruments and probably smoke some doobies. So they just say that they would be able to hear, like, in the evenings, like, them playing their guitars and stuff. That's pretty cool. Okay, so that's our connection to the classic rock days. And are we ready for our commercial break? Can we do the commercial now? You've been giving me the finger for a few minutes. All right, we'll be right back after these commercial messages.
This is Community Radio for the Coast Side.
100.9 KHMB. Coastal Windage is brought to you by Cameron's Restaurant and Pub in Half Moon Bay. Come for the food, stay for the fun. That's Cameron's Restaurant and Pub on Highway 1 in Half Moon Bay.
Hi, this is Jay Michaels. Make sure to join me along with Stan Warren Luttrell after Coastal Windage. We'll get a look at today in history and a brand new forgotten find. Coming up at 10 a.m. from 100.9 FM KHMB.
And we're back. This is Ruben with Crystalline, Coastal Windage, the talk of the coast. And we've entered the speed talking round of the show. So now we have about 3 hours of material for the next 29 minutes. Okay, here you now have a chance to step back in time and get your steps in. Granada Community Services District is offering yet another great community event. This is the benefit of becoming a community services district. You can offer these types of things. I still don't understand the people who still to this day will vehemently post on Nextdoor. Anytime GCSD puts up a thing, hey, check out our new plans for Burnham Strip, whatever, they just got to come in and talk about how it's just some kind of criminal act that they became a community services district. Separate, that's a separate rant for a separate day.
But shout out to Hope and Nora.
Yes. And GCSD. Just,
yeah.
But, yeah, Hope Atmore, known. Hope was in a gymnastics instructor at Gymtown when my son was a toddler. So I've known Hope all those years. She's incredible. The whole family is. Tom, her husband, Basil, her son. They're just good folks. Anyways, GCSD is offering a guided history walk through El Granada. What's there to see in El Granada, you say? Well, actually quite a bit. This walking tour, you're going to learn about the area's early beginnings, the exciting arrival of the railroad, the Ocean Shore Railroad, which we've already talked about. There's actually many Ocean Shore Railroad depots here still on the coast side. Valimar Station, we just talked about.
Breakwater Barbecue.
Breakwater Barbecue is the original North El Granada station, and the original main El Granada station is still there. It's on the corner of Portola and Alameda in El Granada. So they will be talking about those things. In the walking tour, they'll talk about how El Granada evolved after the railroad disappeared. It's about a 1.5 mile walk. Views of the harbor, the two former train station sites we just talked about, remnants of the original curbs, and several early homes. It's a free event, but it'd be nice if you RSVP'd so they know how many people are going. Go to GCSD website for all that information. To prep yourself for that, you need to get the definitive history of El Granada and its birth as a vacation spot along the old Ocean Shore Railroad, which is Barbara Vanderwerf's History of El Granada, titled Granada, a Synonym for Paradise. Barbara is a former El Granada resident and noted local historian and author. This book, which is hard to find now, but you need to get it. If you're interested in the history of El Granada and you have not read this book, then you do not know what you're talking about. Published in 1992 by Gumtree Lane Books in El Granada, and if you've read the book, you'll know that Gumtree Lane is significant to the history of El Granada. Gumtrees being the eucalyptus that are just suddenly, in the last 10 years, the fire hazard that's just going to ruin the entire coastside, and all of them must be cut down, including many of them from the old Gumtree Lane that now is the old lumber yard there in Murata East. Anyways, in fact, during COVID, when we couldn't have live guests in the studios, I got the interns to hunt Barbara down so we could have her on the show as a live interview guest. Live interviews during COVID were called the new normal, and they were phone interviews because we couldn't have the guests in the studio. Barbara, we tracked her down, and it took some work. We tracked her down, found her living in Washington State somewhere. checked it out. It's a really great and a rare interview with Barbara. October 2nd, 2020. You can find it on khmbradio.com. October 2nd, 2020, our interview with Barbara Vanderwerf. It's her book, Granada, Synonym for Paradise, an invaluable piece of local history, historic photos, and she really ties together Ocean Shore Railroad's visionary attempts to manufacture a town out of whole cloth with today's wooded, bustling community of 3,500 people or so. And per the history walk, there are still remnants of the Ocean Shore Railroad visible in El Granada, as we said, Breakwater Barbecue. The original El Granada train depot on Portola and Alameda, which then became the El Granada Clubhouse and now is a private residence. Sidewalks to Nowhere in the Xerces Butterfly Parcel in North El Granada, that 6-acre parcel that has butterflies and owls and eucalyptus that's soon going to be, or has been rezoned for high-density housing, because who would want butterflies and owls? But if you walk through there, there's just sidewalks, like, half-buried in the sand. Curbs, the original curbs from 1905 to 1912 are all around El Granada, including in the front of, lining the front of my house. I love that. Sometimes if you dig deep in, like, a vacant lot, you will come across some of these sidewalks. So that's pretty cool. The Monterey Pines that are in El Granada, those are from the Ocean Shore Railroad. If you look at Barbara Vanderwerf's book, this was just a denuded wasteland. So these trees that have been added have given some variety to the landscape and the look, as well as some shade. It was a denuded wasteland when Ocean Shore started building here.
That was a great use of your word of the day toilet paper.
Denuded?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, good. I looked at it before, you know, while I was contemplating things. Per relics or remnants of Ocean Shore Railroad, I chagrin myself, or I feel chagrin personally, because when I first moved here in 25 years ago, my dad and I were riding bikes on the bluffs near the Miramar Beach restaurant when we came across a boy of about 12 who was all excited to tell us that he had found a railroad spike in a field near his house in Miramar. My dad's a railroad buff, and he was very excited, and he was grilling the kid for more information. And I was over there with my hands crossed, you know, with the look of a skeptic, because I didn't believe that the kid had found it there. I didn't believe anything, because I didn't know that there had been a railroad coming. I was like, why would there be a railroad spike here on the coastside? Like, where's the railroad? Oh, no. Ignorance, you know, right? So years later, when I found out there was a railroad here, I just never forget that little episode because my dad was so excited. I remember him saying, no, it looks like a real railroad spike. I believe the kid. I'm like, no way. That kid was totally pulling our leg. Anyways. All right.
I'm so shocked.
That I didn't believe? that I wanted to be, you're lying to me, little kid. Okay. Okay, we got to get this community alert in. We got a lot of stuff, but it's just a sad thing, and we got to talk about it. The highly pathogenic avian influenza has been confirmed in northern elephant seals at Año Nuevo. So on February 19th and 20th, some dead seals and some seals with abnormal respiratory and neurological signs were found at Año Nuevo. Seven weaned elephant seal pups were tested, and they tested positive for the HPA1, H5N1, whatever, some kind of flu, avian flu. And go to coastsidebuzz.com. I don't know where Michelle Dragony got these photos. There are some just absolutely creepy photos of two humans in full hazmat suits standing on the dunes overlooking a colony of these elephant seals as they're laying on the sand. And it just looks like literally something out of a science fiction movie. And it's super creepy that this is the world we're in, that the wild animals that live in our world, I mean, maybe this is a natural thing that would happen anyways, but somehow it seems like humans are contributing to this. But when you see humans in hazmat suits, and there's another adorable photo of an elephant seal laying on the ground and somebody swabbing its nostril. Oh. You can see it swabbing its nostril. It was just laying there with its cute elephant seal eyes. Anyways, go to coastsidebuzz.com. Michelle, as always, has all of the dope on that. So that's happening in Año Nuevo. But marine mammal expert and coastside resident Sue Pemberton posted on Nextdoor that some dead seals have been found outside the reserve as well. And she cautions, if you see any species of scavengers like coyote, fox, raccoon, puma, bobcat, vultures, gulls, or ravens that look like they have neurological issues or are dead, let the California Department of Fish and Wildlife know. And don't touch these things, and don't let your dogs touch these things. I was out with my dog on Surfers Beach on Tuesday, and there were two dead birds in two different spots. And, of course, my dog ran over and was sniffing. Generally, you don't... avian flu for years now. Don't let your dogs get... So yeah. I pulled them away. But Sue is saying, don't let them anywhere near them, live or marine animals or birds, live or dead, and clean their paws before you load them into the car, and clean your shoes before entering your vehicle. Well, that ship has sailed. So we'll see. We're doing fine over here. Okay. We'll save those for next week. How am I supposed to find the sane center? What is the sane center? Like, this doesn't exist. This is not a real thing.
I think it's so funny that it perplexes you so bad.
First of all, the word sane I don't really think applies to America anymore. But okay, let's just assume.
So this is a term that has been floating around the chamber world for at least 10 years, if not more. That's the first time I ever heard it, was at a conference. But basically, and how it was applied was that one of the roles of the chamber is to help find the sane center between the regulations that government wants to impose on businesses and the, you know, how to get the businesses to comply with these rules and make them compliable and, you know, just try to bring everybody to the table and find that compromise. So the sane center is that, just like we see every day, there's people way on one side and they're very adamant that their side is the only side, it's the good side, blah, 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 because everybody's a hero in their own story. And then there's going to be the total opposition, which wants the exact opposite and is just as passionate about that and believes that they're the hero in their story, and that the sane center is that no matter what the situation is, there is a middle ground. Now, I'm not saying that people try to find that middle ground, but in every...
What, are you saying they should try to find
that? They should, okay. They should, but, like, many don't. Like, that's, I think, one of the things that's been lost over the years is people... And I honestly, like, I am one of those, which you will probably, hopefully, appreciate, that I do think that the social media algorithms has made this a lot worse, is that people are just unwilling to compromise. And it's because I think they get served up so much stuff that backs up their belief.
They're served up stuff, but also on-demand culture allows them to self-select for what they already want.
But it also, yes, and then it gets served up to them on top of that. So it's like, you know, I don't know if I said it on the show before, but I was chatting with a friend who had just gotten back from a European vacation, and he was talking about mayonnaise.
Love that movie.
And he was talking about mayonnaise, and all of a sudden I was being served up, because apparently in Europe mayonnaise is just a real hot item. And all of a sudden, no joke, by the end of the day, I was being served up ads for mayonnaise.
Okay, I need to just warn you that there is a nefarious organization that is infiltrating everything, that is Big Mayo. Big Mayo, you look, suddenly mayo is everywhere and in everything and infused, and like, Big Mayo is coming for you. So be careful. And so it's no surprise
that all of a sudden
that Big Mayo is listening. Yeah, Big Mayo is watching you. Big Mayo is listening.
Great for making grilled cheese sandwiches. So I think even people who, like, they seek it out and then, you know, that or talk about it, and then it gets served up to them even more. So, but ultimately, there is always a middle ground. I cannot think of any situation where there is not a middle ground. But that middle ground requires both sides to negotiate and be willing to win some and lose some. And unfortunately, in a lot of situations, the two sides just can't seem to understand or get on board with the fact that you have to lose some. Like...
Yes, because
you have to give up something and allow the other side to gain something and to find that sane center, because, you know, because then all that happens is one side, quote unquote, wins it all, but then the other side just pushes that much harder, and then you end up with these pendulums that just swing so far one way to the other. But trying to find the sane center is actually not hard. Finding the sane center is not hard. It's just getting people to agree to them.
Okay, so yeah,
hard.
But okay, so finding a sane center can exist and
does exist.
And acknowledging or recognizing what the logical or, you know, most efficient or best overall solution or position is also not that difficult. But the rub is, have you met people?
Yeah.
Right? Like...
it's just, yeah. Unfortunately,
how you get people,
come
especially...
Come into a culture where, quote-unquote, like that negotiating and giving up any latitude on your side is just, like, this crazy, over-exaggerated defeat that, like, oh my gosh, you were asking, let's just say you were asking for, you know, $10,000 and they're willing to give you $8,000 if you take 2 of it and spend it on the kittens, right? You're like, that's not a loss. Like, you're still getting what you were aiming for or whatever. Like, whatever the situation is. It's just really, the Saints Center, it does exist. It always exists. It's not going well. It's just people need to get back to finding it.
Well, I don't see that happening anytime soon. I mean, I guess it's nice to have a wish list of, like, I wish that we could get to the same center, but...
I think it starts with local, like, on the local level, right? It's got to trickle... That's one of those things that has to trickle up. So
Okay, well, we're going to get City Council Person Paul Nagengast on for his... We're kind of doing a quarterly check-in with him, and
yeah.
So it's about time to have him back on. To see if we, City of Half Moon Bay, can find their sane center, because they're...
I'll say I've worked on quite a few things with them where we were able to negotiate a sane center, where both, yeah.
Okay.
I would say that they're actually pretty decent at it.
Okay.
On the things that I have to work on, I'm not saying everything.
I mean, I don't know, the view from the Mid-Coast is not always so positive of... City of Half Moon Bay got their act together, but, you know,
yeah, but there's other players. There's other players in that who do not make it easy.
No, it's not easy. The coast side is not easy. All right, here, we'll just, all right, let's talk about this, and if we have time, we'll get to some email. From a coast side tragedy, something good can come. It's happened before. When the coast side tragedy we're talking about right now, obviously, is the accident that claimed the life of a local teenager a couple weeks ago, Cash Crowitz. Okay? But it's happened before. On January 18th, 2021, a young boy named Arune Pruthi was swept away from the beach at Cal Ranch by a sneaker wave right before his family's eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Never seen again. They looked for months and months, never found his body. Arune's parents didn't know the risks of sneaker waves, didn't know what they were, how to recognize hazardous conditions, or what life-saving actions to take. And at Cal Ranch, there were no life-saving measures to be had.
Mm-hmm. Now we have the life ring.
Right. So they founded the Arune Foundation. Out of this tragedy, they created the Arune Foundation to transform their grief into a purpose, raising awareness about the very real dangers of sneaker waves and educating others on beach and ocean safety. And as part of that, the foundation has also installed numerous life buoy ring stations along the coast side. There's one at Surfers Beach.
Mm-hmm.
There's one at Mavericks. You can see them now. There's one at Cal. There's one at Poplar.
Yeah, they're working to get them up and down the entire California coastline.
Exactly. So from the tragedy of Arune came the foundation and the good works that they're doing. And
they're also working to give kids in cities swimming lessons.
Which, ironically, we've got a problem with that here on the coast side, where the ocean's right there, and we have almost no public swimming pool available to us. Hopefully that will change. I'm not holding my breath, but maybe. So maybe Cash can become the next Arune, and people can get people to finally wake up and realize that something needs to be done about e-motos and the heavier e-bikes. And maybe that's already starting to happen. I mean, something like this possibly could snap people out of the, like, mumbling that's been going on about e-bike regulation over the past decade or so.
But I am going to make one plea. So I was talking to somebody who is close with Cash's parents. And literally within a day of his passing, people were coming, and I'm going to say coming at them, about immediately going to the government and starting to advocate and all of these things. Mm. And I will say one of the differences is between Arune and Cash is that family had time to grieve and come up with their solution on their own in their own time. And just people attempting to force Cash's family and their friends to become these major advocates for this, which I'm sure at some point maybe they'll want to sign on and help. But please let them grieve their child and come onto this of their own time and of their own volition. That was a comment that I did not expect to hear. And I was truly, truly, as you are disappointed in the human race often, I was disappointed that people were calling them, people they didn't know were calling them because they found their phone number, were calling people close to them that have businesses in town and was able to find their phone numbers and demanding that they start their trek on Capitol Hill.
Yeah, that is not appropriate. No. And really, so obviously insensitive that, again, like, why do I have a negative view of humans? Because of that kind of stuff. So when I'm saying that, like, Cash could become the next Arune, I'm not even speaking to the family of, like, get out there, create a foundation, and advocate. I'm talking about what has already happened of, like, the tragedy that occurred to Cash, or happened to Cash, finally is causing some other folks to talk about it. For example, last week in the city, Half Moon Bay City Council, there was some discussion of the intersection there at Terrace.
Yeah, that they've been working on, and Caltrans has been holding up.
Right. Quote from, I believe this was interim director Seaton. Seeley, yeah.
Todd!
Quote, the reason we are bringing the issue to the council this evening is partially because of the incident that happened this week. That's exactly what I'm talking about. The incident that happened is catalyzing, or, you know, forcing people to, like, you can't look away anymore. So that intersection has languished and been sitting there for various reasons. Again, Director Seeley said something that's very important that we've been thinking about for some time. It's been in design phase from 2018. Made sure to throw Caltrans under the bus, which they throw themselves under the bus. I mean, there's no effort needed to do that. Calling it a fairly straightforward project that has been in the works for a decade or more. Monies have been allocated and promised, but funding has not been approved. Supposedly, this is going to happen in June.
Yeah,
$10.8 million.
Yeah, this intersection, according to Todd's report, this intersection was slated to be done before the current Caltrans project was slated to start. Like, that was the original plan. And I'm pretty sure that Todd had said in that report that basically what they were running into is they would go to Caltrans with the plan. Caltrans would have a bunch of questions and changes, and they would make those changes and then bring it back, which that all takes time, right? And they would bring it back, and then Caltrans sends it back with more questions and changes. And, like, they've just been in this loop of Caltrans insisting that there be changes, and then that all delays it. And
I mean, here's the thing. So they're talking about they're going to put a light in there. Maybe the reason that it hasn't gone through is because that whole concept is a complete poop show. You're going to put a light there. And I know you live north of there.
Mm-hmm.
When you try to go north of there, almost at any time, but especially from like 3:30 on,
mm-hmm.
it is backed up sometimes as far down as Kelly and on to 92 and up towards the hill because of the traffic light at
one
and Main.
Merging.
The traffic, you know, the merging. And
it should be a roundabout.
So you know what needs to happen is they need to have an alternate route. Okay, just putting a traffic light there is just going to back traffic up even further going south. It's already horrible. Putting a traffic light there is not going to make it better. What it will do, however, is provide at least maybe a safe crossing. Then maybe there'll be a crosswalk there because guess what? You hope that things will change and be better. And yet, a couple days after Cash's accident, I was at the zipper there. And here comes a kid on an e-moto coming down southbound in the northbound shoulder, comes to the terrace, zips across the northbound lane and sits in the middle between the two lanes, waiting for a gap, and then zips across to the other side. So at least I guess if there was a crosswalk, although motorcycles and e-motos and stuff are not supposed to be in crosswalks or shoulders, but at least there would be a safe way to get across. Okay, wait, 4 minutes? So in that same council meeting, Matthew Chittister, the city manager, also addressed e-bike safety. Quote, "This incident reinforces how important an issue this is. Talked about the safety page on their website and parent awareness is important in a county electric bicycle safety pamphlet and a traffic safety
blah,
course.
Blah, blah, blah. Nobody's reading that.
You know what Matthew never said? The words that were never said? E-moto. Talk about e-bikes. That was not the... that is only part of the issue. Councilperson Ruddock did bring up e-motos. Very, very disappointingly, Councilperson Brownstone effectively shrugged the whole thing off as kids being kids. Hey, you know, like, we can make rules, but, like, they're kids. They're not going to follow them, so why should we make any rules? They're going to do what they're going to do, so what do you want to do? That was really, given the whole situation, weak. And Councilperson Penrose, quote, "These things should be licensed." You think? You
well,
think?
And... I will say she's been on that track for years, because regulating even just the regular e-bikes, the true e-bikes on the coastal trail, was something that was kind of a heated topic a couple of years ago, and whether or not they should be moved off the coastal trail to the Naomi Partridge. But the Naomi Partridge just follows Highway 1, which I think is also equally as dangerous.
And the Naomi Partridge does not go, and it ends... ends. It just ends. It is not completed.
I wish there was a better trail named after that sweet, sweet woman.
I mean, I don't mind. The trail's fine. I mean, it's fine. It has to cross
it's
the
high... It's dangerous. It has to cross so many blind driveways and streets.
Yeah.
It is as dangerous.
Well, this feels like a moment when things could change for the better. The council's talking about it. The county's talking about it. It's high on people's minds right now. And they might at least be interested in dealing with the nuances and complications of this issue. But, so a good thing could come, but moments like these are fleeting. Just ask the families and victims of mass shootings, okay? Like, now's not the time, now's not the time, now's not the time. Time goes by, and then it's not as poignant anymore. And then it's like, well, I mean, really, do we need to do that? So, I'm just going to say this right now. It's going to take more than a couple discussions at the city council. It's even going to take more than a couple of rules to change the situation. Parents are going to be... These kids are not buying these expensive vehicles themselves. Parents are going to have to become more involved.
And I will say, I know at least one parent that has them and is selling them.
Great. Municipalities have to set clear rules based on informed decision-making and then enforce those rules. But here's the thing. The bicycle and moto industry needs to grow a conscience and take some part of this. Okay. But we want to believe that something good can happen of this. I mean, you have to believe. Like, a tragedy like this. But again, leave the family alone, please. Leave them alone. All right? All right. We will be back next week. We'll get to the emails next week. We needed to discuss this thing.
Yes.
And have that glimmer of hope for something good. We'll be back next week, as we always are, at 9 a.m. on Friday with some email and some other fun Coastside stuff like we always do. All right. Everybody have a great week. Enjoy the sun. And we'll see you next week on Coastal Windage, the talk of the coast.